Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast, where editors of Managed Healthcare Executive chat with healthcare executives in the C-Suite and professionals. Our conversations are about the most important issues facing American healthcare today, such as its cost, effectiveness, delivery, organization, and its fairness. Listen in, learn a lot. Hi, everyone. My name is Brianna Contreras, and I'm an editor of Managed Healthcare Executive. In this episode, I had the pleasure of speaking with Chuck Salvo, Managing Director of Tony Corf Partners, about some of the common challenges and trends he sees in healthcare organizations today. We also touched on topics involving mergers between healthcare organizations, the question whether CEOs are being replaced, and the importance of a board in a healthcare organization.
Hello, Chuck. How are you doing today?
I am doing great. It's great to be on the podcast.
Oh, happy to have you. So first off, can you just tell our listeners about your role and organization?
Sure. So I'm a managing director at Tony Corf Partners. We're a boutique management advisory and restructuring firm. We work in a lot of distressed hospital situations. Right now, my client, which has been my client for many, many years, is a post-merger safety net hospital here in Brooklyn, New York. So that has been basically consuming about 95% of my time over the last couple of years. But it's very rewarding. And like I said, our firm really specializes in those organizations that are trying to find their way. So I am happy to talk with you today.
Awesome. I'm excited. So first to start, what are some common challenges or trends you see from healthcare organizations today?
Well, I mean, you know, I was physically sitting in the hospital through COVID. Our firm had been at a similar hospital through Sandy, which was another, you know, really tough time for hospitals. But coming out of COVID to the extent that we are, not that it's gone, but we're managing it a little bit better, it does feel like the entire landscape is different. I've been in healthcare for about 25 years, maybe even a little bit longer. And I don't recall a time where there was so much turmoil, to be quite honest. You know, you've got your core finance issues, which are, you know, largely volume driven. Volume hasn't bounced back to the degree we, you know, wanted it to or thought it would. Then you layer on top of that the labor issues, which, you know, again, I don't want to keep saying it, but I've never seen healthcare organizations challenged by labor the way that they are today.
Oh, definitely. Thank you. So you did mention, I believe you mentioned mergers, or if I not, I read it probably previously. So I know your organization is, you know, big on mergers, especially, you know, with organizations that, like you said, do need a little bit more help. So if you can explain, you know, what happens when companies merge and maybe how are patients of the organizations that maybe have closed, or something along those lines, how are they affected?
Sure. So we just completed a merger where I was personally in an interim role, and it brought three safety net providers together. Yeah, I've been through mergers quite a bit over the course of my career. I was with Ernst & Young and a couple other advisory firms that were pretty deep, you know, in M&A work. I think the story is still the same. It's all about culture, right? It's all about, you know, communication and culture. And can you take two disparate cultures and find common ground? You know, healthcare is a high touch service, right? And these are extremely bright people, scientists, nurses, that, you know, have typically been doing things a certain way and typically have a viewpoint as to what it means to give great care or what types of patients or what the culture, needs to look like. And when you try to bring two together, you're obviously always going to have some fits and starts. But I think if you're not paying attention to the culture and if you're not trying to drive a common, a common understanding of what the mission is and getting people to get on board behind leadership, it's really hard for it to be anything other than just a transaction. And I think that's what's been happening quite a bit are transactions, not mergers, just pure transactions.
Okay. Now, again, those patients maybe that are with organizations that are, kind of going through this process as well, maybe, is, I guess, I feel like I answered my own question. Are they kind of just, they go along for the ride in a sense, in this transition period?
Can you rephrase that a little bit?
Yeah, maybe just so how these patients of these organizations are being affected during that time.
Well, I don't, I don't typically see, immediate impact of the patient. Like care doesn't get markedly better tomorrow
Right.
because a big organization bought a smaller organization. But I think, in the FTC, I think, all of the policy tag think tanks and whatnot are looking at these mergers because right now it's really feels like an arms race. The healthcare delivery systems need to get scale, need to get bigger because the health insurance companies have scale and they're getting bigger, right? So you've got these enormous profits in the insurance industry. I think, Humana had a nearly $1 billion margin on 2 quarters ago. $1 billion margin is just enormous. United Health Group is a 300 billion. So, you've got these health insurance companies that are flush with cash. Market caps are through the roof. There's no, health systems have to find some way to sort of, make it a fair fight.
So my next question was, if you see mergers continuing, in the market.
Well, I think there's been a lot of work done around what is the benefit or the value of a merger, right? And it seems like most of the experts are seeing that it's just driving prices up, right? And again, that's partially due to this push and pull with insurance companies, right? If I can't provide, the high margin services that I need to keep my health system balanced, then I'm going to have to raise prices, right, to support all of this care that, is high acuity and, a lot of times is undercompensated or not compensated. I know the FTC has been involved in looking at a lot of the new mergers that have, sort of come up. I know there's one here in New York State that just was put on hold because it would create, a single health system for probably an 80-mile radius, right? So now you've got this sort of antitrust issues, but at the same time, and I'll wrap up this question right here. But when you look at some of the larger mergers that have just recently happened, we're becoming nationalized, not in a political sense, but we are starting to see what look like almost national level health systems. Health systems that cover 5, 6, 8, 10 states with hundreds of hospitals. I think that horse is kind of out of the barn on these mergers. And I think that, you'll have one-offs that are, stopped or whatever. But I think by and large, it's going to be a race to scale. And we're going to end up, I'm just editorializing here, but we're going to end up with 10 or 20 massive health systems that run every hospital in the country, and they're going to battle with 10 or 20 massive insurance companies that, set the payment mechanisms for all those people, all that patient care. And I think the one thing that will get left out is the rural providers, is the small, town providers, is the safety net providers that are, out there taking care of communities that don't have access to care.
Right. So, but these patients who fall under the rural category, that they'll still be taken care of in a way, though. Hopefully.
I mean, we're seeing a lot of rural hospital closures. And frankly, no, they're not getting taken care of. And I don't mean to be so pessimistic about it, but I think that the whole telehealth, when COVID, happened, I think there was a huge push on telehealth, right? We have to do video visits. And I mean, it was a game changer for a lot of our patients that couldn't leave, their apartment buildings or their nursing homes or whatever. And then we started, doing remote patient monitoring. So we were giving them things to take home, scales, glucometers, whatnot. But what I think that did was set this kind of concept or cement this kind of concept that we could do most of this stuff virtually. So when you close this rural hospital that is, the only place for 40, 50 miles where there is a doctor, now I think we're making the leap that, well, we can do a lot with telehealth and we could do a lot with the hospital at home. We could do a lot with remote patient monitoring. But, for me personally, I have a hard time believing that that is the answer. I think you still need the interaction with a healthcare professional, and you need to be able to have that interaction without taking a 40-mile drive or taking 3 days off of work or going, to a major city where you don't have any family or support system.
Right. So as of now, that still probably can be the only option, is just you have to drive that distance. There's
Yes.
really no solution as of yet. Okay. Thank you. Now on to another topic, more focused on, the C-suite, maybe some labor and staffing. So the question of CEOs being replaced came up. If you can explain that, and are hospitals building a bench to replace them?
I don't know that they are. Healthcare has never been the sexiest place to go for, people coming out of college and B school, right? It's banking, it's tech, it's startups. And over these last 20 years, like I was saying earlier, these health systems have grown from, a three hospital system used to be a big system. Now you're a 100 hospital system, with billions of dollars in, in revenue. And so it's become so much more complex, but I don't know that that bench is there. A lot of the people that were running those three hospital systems are now running these 20, 30, 50 hospital systems. And, it's hard to sort of drop somebody into that seat when that seat becomes vacant. And these men and women are getting older. I mean, we're seeing, some of the titans of the industry start to step down. I mean, unfortunately pass away. And I don't know that there is, they were the first people to do this. So who is going to come behind them, and how do they get those skills to manage at such, a massive scale?
All right, thank you. Now on to, the labor issues of, of course, burnout and staffing shortage. Are there any possible solutions, on those issues, or, the loss of labor in the workplace?
This seems like such a downer of a call because
I
I don't have any good things to tell people. Like the sun is,
know.
the sun will rise tomorrow,
Right.
but it's one of those things where you just can't see what a solution will be, a long-term solution will be. And we've never seen anything like this in the sense that we had COVID and doctors and nurses got burned out. Many of them that would have worked a little while longer decided this is not worth it. So you had this group that just, they know the health system, they know how to deliver care, saying, I'm done. This has wiped me out. You had people die of COVID or, end up with long COVID that couldn't come back to work. So you have that one leg of the stool. The second leg of the stool is all of the alternative care models that are out there. Right. So that nurse or that doctor or that tech that was working a midnight to six shift in an emergency room, really tough work, really hard work. They're now taking a job at an urgent care center where, much lighter load, much less, much fewer difficult patients coming in, lots more resources available to them. And they, punch the clock and go home at night, and the pay is just fine. Or they're going to work for a health insurance company doing record reviews. So now you're taking this excellent seasoned nurse out of direct patient care. She or he is making the same amount of money doing, prior authorization denials or, some sort of administrative work. And now the system has lost that institutional depth and that care, the caring part. So you've got, the alternative places to work. You've got the just pure burnout, early retirement, death of all that stuff. And I do a lot of work with recruitment and, especially of physicians. And I always sort of, didn't give it much credence that the newer generations of workers want to work differently. I'm 50 years old, so there's two generations worth of employees coming in to the workforce. And it is true, they want to work differently, and they don't. And I'm not saying it's good or it's bad, but the model isn't flexible enough right now to change. You're trying to turn, a cruise ship because we've done it this way for so long. Yes, you have to be on call 3 nights a week. You have to carry a beeper 3 nights a week. Well, there's people say, I don't want to do that. So I will go work at, an ambulatory surgery center, and I'll join a group or I'll get employed by the surgery center, and I won't have to do that call coverage, or I won't have to run a clinic. I think their desire and the needs of the health system are not in sync right now, the health systems. I think it's going to take a long time to figure out how to make the health system work environment sync up to what those employees want, for their career. So that three-legged stool is, I mean, it's just putting so much pressure on both the financials and leadership and the staff. The staff for, shorter staff, more patients per, FTE. And I don't really know how we solve it. I don't think there is we're going to solve it with patchwork for right now, but long term, I don't know what the solution will be.
Right. Thank you. Now earlier you did mention your organization helps, assist on, safety net issues. So can you maybe explain where a board of a health company can stand in that aspect and maybe how important it is for them to be educated on, the certain complexities of the industry?
That's a really good question. And yes, we do spend a lot of our time working with distressed hospitals. A lot of the smaller hospitals, a lot of the independent hospitals have very smart people on their boards, but they have other responsibilities. These are volunteers, right? And as the industry is very complex, and what it seems like is that the boards aren't getting full awareness of the problems until the problem is almost too big to solve. And I don't know whether that is, just a product of voluntary boards that, try to do these jobs as a means of giving back to the community. And it's certainly not that there's not enough intelligence, but healthcare is gotten so complex and the numbers have gotten so large that, they need more education. And I think that's one of the things that our firm tries to do. I mean, unfortunately, when we show up, the problem is acute. When we get the call, the problem is acute. But what we've tried to sort of push out to our clients is let us come in and do some board education. Let us make sure they understand, what the finance, what's underneath the financials, what do the trends tell us, what going to happen if everything that's happened over the last 3 years happens over the next 3 years. What is that going to look like for the hospital? What are some of the strategic options that they should be pursuing? What partners might be out there that they could, find that scale? But I'll be honest, we don't, it that is a far that's a fun project, and it's far less often than that's the call we get versus the call that we're going to run out of cash in 4 months and we need to start closing down service lines, or we need to, find a partner or whatever. So I think getting your boards and making sure your board is educated, not educated, the traditional sense, but educated about the operations and the long-term prospects for the healthcare provider is really key.
Got it. Thank you. But that is, for time's sake, that's actually all I did have. But if there's anything that you'd like to touch on that maybe I didn't ask that you feel like is really important for our listeners to know about, helping companies kind of come back up from the ground or.
Well, I think it's just, I think the only thing I would say is that having, spent half of my life working with very successful organizations and the other half of my life working with organizations that struggle, I prefer the ones that struggle because I feel like I don't know, they need help more than others do. But I think that as we ignore those sort of distressed providers, or we let these, distressed providers go. Atlanta Medical Center, just recently closed, and it leaves one trauma center in the city of Atlanta. We have to find a way as, a people, as an industry, whatever you want to call it, to ensure that we don't lose all of these organizations, because the people are going to go somewhere to get the care. All right. And it just, I was speaking to a group the other day, and I'll leave on this. My client, probably not the highest quality provider based on, Leapfrog scores and things like that. But a basic MRI with contrast at my hospital costs you, the managed care company, or you, the patient, or whoever, about $870. One of our, premier marquee hospitals in this city of New York that everyone wants to go to, that same MRI with contrast is going to cost about $3,400. Now, if you're having some sort of, high complexity surgical and or your doc, that makes sense. I understand why people decide I want to go here versus here. But when you have that kind of cost differential for a very straightforward basic service, there's no reason that insurance companies and patients shouldn't look or shouldn't have a means to look at an alternative provider for that care. And I think that just gets that gets lost in the sauce because you think to yourself, I want to go to the hospital I always go to. The hospital right up. But at some point people are going to have to start making decisions with their wallets as well as their heart.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and follow Managed Healthcare Executive on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. For more information on Managed Healthcare Executive, visit our website at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.